You know how it is trying to keep up. There's just so much information right now.
No.
It feels like a flood sometimes.
Absolutely. It's overwhelming.
Yeah. And that's why we do this deep dive. We try to sift through it all, pull out the key stuff from the reports and articles you're probably looking at too. Sort of a shortcut to what really matters.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We're aiming to guide you through the complex bits, focus on the core ideas so you don't get bogged down in, well, all the details.
So today we're diving into something pretty fundamental. How we actually measure regulatory compliance. We've got this paper by Dr. Richard Fien, and it suggests a really different way to think about whether rules are being followed.
And the main problem Dr. Fien is tackling is, well, the current system, it's pretty rigid, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it seems like it. How so?
Right now, it's mostly just yes or no. A regulation is met or it isn't. Very black and white.
Okay, simple enough on the surface. But I guess that causes problems for you if you're, you know, working within these systems. The paper argues this all or nothing thing has drawbacks.
It does. Because licensing decisions, they hinge on this binary yes/no for each individual rule. Your compliance summaries just list passes and fails.
Right. So what's the alternative Fien is proposing? You said it was different.
It's quite a shift. Instead of that nominal yes/no scale, he's suggesting an ordinal scale. So think about it like, instead of just compliant or non-compliant, you start recognizing there are different levels, different gradients of compliance.
Gradients, okay.
Yeah, like acknowledging that almost compliant isn't really the same category as nowhere near compliant, which probably feels more true to your own experience, right?
Yeah, that makes intuitive sense. So unpack that ordinal scale for us, more than
Yeah.
just pass/fail. What does that look like for you in practice?
Well, the idea borrows a bit from accreditation systems, maybe program quality frameworks you've seen. It really opens the door to embedding a kind of quality element right into the compliance measurement itself.
The quality element.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. And it also lets us factor in things that you probably think about all the time, the risk tied to a specific rule, and also maybe how widespread noncompliance with that rule actually is.
Okay, that feels important.
Yeah.
Obviously, some rules matter more for safety, for outcomes than others. Can we make this concrete? Is there an example you can use?
Sure. The paper uses a good one. Professional development, training hours. Let's say the rule is 6 hours of training a year.
Okay, standard enough.
In the current system, if your staff does 5.5 hours, they're non-compliant. Full stop. Same bucket as someone with 0 hours. It's that hard line we talked about.
Right, that 6-hour clip doesn't capture much nuance, does it?
Exactly. Now, switch to this proposed ordinal system, it gets more detailed. If staff do more than 6 hours, that could actually be flagged as a positive. Maybe a sign of higher program quality, something that ultimately benefits you.
Ah, so it can go above compliance too.
Potentially, yes, into quality indicators. And if someone's below 6 hours, they're still non-compliant, but you can assess the severity. How far below are they? How many staff are involved? And then you layer on that weight. How critical is this specific training? What's the risk if they don't have it?
So you're looking at the degree, the scope, the potential impact, not just did they hit the number. Makes sense. The paper also mentions some math, shifting from 0-1 to a negative 2 to plus 2 scale. What's that about for you?
Yeah, that's the model behind it. It's a way to structure those gradients we talked about. So 0-1 is full compliance, meeting the rule bang on.
Got it.
The -1 and -2 could represent different levels of noncompliance, maybe minor versus major, or one person versus the whole team.
Okay, degrees of not meeting it.
Right. And crucially, the +1 and +2 are for that value-added stuff, quality indicators that go beyond just ticking the compliance box, things that might signal to you a really high-performing program.
So it keeps the basic compliant, non-compliant idea, but layers on this quality dimension. And the paper suggests this might help you understand the link between rules and actual quality better.
Precisely. There's this thing called the theory of regulatory compliance, and it's noticed that just strictly following every single rule doesn't always lead to higher program quality scores in a straight line, as measured by tools people use.
So more compliance doesn't automatically equal better quality for you.
Not always linearly, no. So Dr. Fien suggests that by building this quality element into the compliance measure, we might get a clearer, maybe more linear connection. It could make the relationship more understandable.
Okay, this is where it could get really practical for you if you're in licensing or quality improvement. The paper floats the idea of combining licensing and quality rating systems, QRIS, for instance, into maybe one system using something called key indicator methodology.
Yeah, that's a major potential implication for you. Imagine if licensing inspectors could look at both basic compliance and these quality indicators during the same visit.
Streamlining things.
Potentially, yeah. It could mean that certain quality standards, maybe the really crucial ones, become part of the standard regulatory package, not just voluntary extras in a separate system. For you, that can mean a higher baseline quality across the board.
So maybe less jumping between two different sets of hoops, potentially, a more integrated approach that could boost consistency for you.
That's the hope. Focus on the rules and standards that research shows actually predict both compliance and quality, those key indicators, while still keeping a close eye on the high-risk stuff. It could be more efficient, more effective, and ultimately better safeguard quality for you.
So this new way of measuring needs a way to be easily understood. The paper brings in the Regulatory Compliance Scale, the RCS. How does that work? How does it help you make sense of this?
Right. The RCS flows directly from that theory of regulatory compliance, especially the idea that substantial compliance is often more telling than absolute perfection on every minor rule, and focusing on the rules that really impact outcomes for you. The RCS table lays it out, often with levels like 7 down to 1 or maybe A to D grades.
Like a grading scale.
Sort of, yeah. These levels match up with degrees of compliance, full, substantial, medium, low. And importantly, they also link to risk levels, from minimal risk up to high risk. So a lower score on the RCS, that signals potentially higher risk for you.
Okay, and how do those levels, substantial, medium, low, connect to the actual number of violations you might find? That's something you'd want to know.
Definitely. The RCS table usually gives model examples, like full might be 0 violations. Substantial could be, say, 1 to 3 violations. Medium maybe 4 to 9, and low 10 or more, something like that.
Gotcha.
And crucially, there's also often a weighted version. Rules considered more critical for safety or quality carry more weight. So violating a high-risk rule hits the RCS score harder, reflecting the greater potential impact on you.
Now, the paper doesn't just propose this, it looks at data. There's a figure showing a pretty weak link between just counting violations and those GSEERS quality scores. GSEERS being that early childhood quality tool. What does that weak link tell you?
Yeah, what's interesting for you there is that just adding up every single tick mark, every violation during an inspection, it doesn't seem to strongly predict the overall program quality, at least as measured by tools like ESAERS. It suggests that maybe not all violations are created equal in terms of their impact on what you actually experience, the quality of care or education.
Okay, but then the next figure showed a clearer pattern when they used the RCS levels full, substantial, medium, low. And it brought up this ceiling effect. What's that and why does it matter to you?
Ah, the ceiling effect. That's a key takeaway from there. It basically means that once programs hit a certain level of compliance, often that substantial level on the RCS, their quality scores don't necessarily keep climbing much higher, even if they reach full compliance, 0 violations.
So getting from pretty good to absolutely perfect doesn't always boost quality.
Right. Sometimes the data even showed full compliance having slightly lower quality scores than the substantial. It suggests that pouring all energy into eliminating every last minor issue might not give you the biggest bang for the buck in terms of the overall quality you care about. Diminishing returns, perhaps.
Interesting. So chasing perfection on paper might not always translate to a better experience for you.
That seems to be the implication. And the early tests of the RCS, both weighted and unweighted, suggest it does a better job distinguishing quality levels than just counting violations. But, Dr. Fien is careful to say more research is definitely needed, especially in different settings that might be relevant to you.
The paper digs deeper, right, into studies validating this RCS in different places. What did those validation studies find that you should know about?
Yeah, those were important for seeing how the RCS actually works out in the real world, in places maybe like yours. They looked at how well the RCS scores lined up with established quality measures, ERS, CLASS, in different U.S. states and Canadian provinces. They tested the original RCS against a few other ways of grouping violations.
And these studies use that 7-5-3-1 scoring for the RCS levels.
That's right. Full compliance got a 7, substantial a 5, medium 3, low 1, creating that ordinal scale, much like the quality sales themselves and the results. While they often found statistically significant links, correlations between the RCS models and the quality scales.
So, real connection.
It suggests there is a meaningful link between compliance level, when measured by the RCS, and the program quality you might experience.
What about those Fibonacci models mentioned? That sounds
No.
mathematical. Why Fibonacci?
Yeah, it sounds a bit out there. But the idea was simply to test if a different type of scaling might capture the relationship better. The Fibonacci sequence has intervals that get wider, so they tried using those widening gaps to define the compliance levels. Just exploring if a nonlinear way of defining the levels might better match the complex reality of how rules affect quality for you.
Okay, exploring different ways to slice the data.
Yeah.
And when they analyzed all these models with ANOVA, that statistical test for differences, what was the bottom line?
The ANOVA generally confirmed that program quality did differ significantly across the various RCS levels. And interestingly, the original RCS model, the one from 2021, actually held its own pretty well. It often performed just as well as, or sometimes better than, the alternatives, including those Fibonacci ones.
So the initial design seems pretty solid, based on this evidence.
That's a good takeaway for you, yeah. While no single model was the absolute winner everywhere, the original RCS showed it has real potential. And the researchers noted the RCS levels are just easier to grasp in terms of quality implications than staring at a raw violation count. They basically recommend that licensing bodies consider trying out the RCS, piloting it, to see how it works in their specific context, which ultimately impacts you.
The paper also zooms out, looking at 11 studies over a decade. How was the RCS used there, and what did that tell us about its value for you?
Right. Across those studies, the RCS cutoffs were slightly different, like full was zero violations, substantial 1-2, medium 3-10, low 11 plus grade. Looking at all that data showed, well, variation. Different states, different provinces had different proportions of programs in each bucket.
Which probably reflects how tough enforcement is, maybe.
Likely, yeah. Differences in enforcement stringency. The main point from looking at that decade of studies is that it reinforces the conclusion. The RCS seems to provide a more meaningful metric for understanding compliance and its link to quality than simply counting violations does for you.
And those specific violation numbers for the buckets, 0, 1, 2, 3, 10, 11, plus, they weren't just picked out of thin air, right? 50 years of research.
Exactly. Dr. Fien makes the point that these groupings aren't arbitrary. They're based on decades of looking at how compliance data actually tends to fall. They represent logical, distinct categories based on observed patterns over a long time.
Okay, then the paper moves into extensions, a grid model, a scoring system. Let's start with that grid showing regulatory compliance versus program quality. What's the key message that visual sends to you?
That grid really paints a picture of the core idea. You've got compliance on the bottom axis, low to full, even including those quality add-ons. Then program quality up the side, low to high. Hmm. The X's plotted show the typical research finding. As compliance gets stricter, quality often kind of plateaus or even dips slightly.
Right, that ceiling effect again.
Exactly. And there's that one italicized X showing the oddball case. Low compliance, but somehow high quality in certain aspects.
So it highlights that it's not always a simple more rules, better quality situation for you. What about the idea of boosting quality and health and safety rules specifically? How does that fit the grid?
The goal there is to try and shift those typical X's. By building more quality elements into the rules, especially crucial health and safety ones, the hope is to push programs towards that bottom right corner, the XXL, representing both high compliance and high quality. This could help flatten that plateau or downturn and deal with the skewed data where lots of programs look fully compliant but might vary a lot in quality for you.
The paper also throws out this idea of a regulatory compliance scoring system and scale.
Mm.
RC3S maybe for grading facilities like restaurants get grades. How would that work for you?
Yeah, the RC3S is a neat concept. It could give you a really quick snapshot of a facility's compliance standing. It proposes using colors maybe blue for excellent down to red for very low compliance and linking those colors to ranges of violations and overall compliance levels.
A visual shorthand for you.
Pretty much. The color gives an immediate feel for the risk level associated with their compliance, and the number ranges for violations in each color band. Those are based on that 40 years of research into typical data distributions, giving you some context for what those numbers mean statistically.
And finally, using these scales for actual licensing decisions, there's a proposed decision-making scale. What's the idea there for someone needing a license?
Well, recognizing that most places cluster at the high end of compliance, full or substantial, this scale offers some starting points for decisions based on a full review. It suggests maybe 98-100% compliance gets a standard license, maybe 90-97% gets a provisional one, below 90% might lead to denial.
But these are just suggestions, right? Jurisdictions might need to tweak those percentages.
Absolutely. Dr. Fien is clear these are initial thoughts. Any agency would need to look at its own data to set thresholds that make sense for their context and priorities. And importantly for you, this scale is really for those comprehensive full reviews, not the quicker methods like risk assessment or differential monitoring.
Okay, let's try to tie this all together. We talked about regulatory compliance scales, RCS, instrument-based program monitoring, IBPM, differential monitoring, DM, integrative monitoring systems, IMS. How do these pieces fit, and what does it mean for how oversight might look for you in the future?
Right. Think of it as layers of approaching oversight, managing risk, and focusing resources effectively for you. Traditional IBPM is like inspecting absolutely everything, very detailed.
The old school way.
Kind of. Yeah. Differential monitoring DM is smarter, more targeted, focusing on higher risk areas or places with past issues. The regulatory compliance scales, RCS, give us a much better tool to actually assess the level and meaning of noncompliance when we find it.
Okay.
And then integrative monitoring systems, IMS, try to pull everything together, different data, different methods for a really holistic view of both compliance and quality. The RCS is really a foundational piece that makes those more flexible risk-based DM and IMS approaches more powerful and meaningful.
So this regulatory compliance scale, it's really a paradigm shift, moving away from just pass-fail.
That's the core idea for you, yes. Getting beyond that simple binary gives a richer, potentially more accurate picture. It could help us pinpoint risks better, weave in quality considerations more effectively, and ultimately support better decisions about licensing and oversight that protect you.
It definitely makes you think differently, doesn't it? If compliance isn't just checking boxes anymore, well, what are the best indicators of safety and quality we should really be zeroing in on for you? Something to ponder. Thanks for digging into this with us.
My pleasure. Always interesting stuff.